guys. This is John Noyes. I'm coming live in Stand to Reason. Now, well, some of you actually listen to me live. I'm filling in for Greg Kokel today. And if you don't know me, I am one of the newer additions to the Stand to Reason staff, which is already incredible, and I consider it a great privilege. To be sitting in this seat and to be in these offices today. Greg is a huge influence in my life. Actually, thinking about it, I can't think of another man that's had more influence on my Christian life than Greg Kokel. I used to listen to this podcast. Before it was, I didn't have podcasts, but this is years ago. I used to listen about 15 years ago. I was listening to Greg 13 years ago as I was walking from atheism to Christianity. And Greg has a saying, you know, we put a stone in somebody's shoe, and he's so good at that. And he put so many stones in my shoe, and there's so many memorable episodes that I've listened to. And to sit here, it's really surreal to be doing this show. And I want to say at the forefront that if you have any questions, I am live. It's Tuesday, and we're live until 6 o'clock. And I'd love to hear from you. And you can call 855-243-9975. And if you're international, don't worry. We have a number for you. You have to start with the country code, which is 1-562-424-8229. And I would really love to hear from you. I'd love to chat with you and try to answer your questions if you got them. But before you even call and before we get into what I'd love to talk about, I'd love to ask that you guys subscribe to our YouTube channel. It's easy to find. You just go to YouTube. You type in the STR videos. Just type in that word, one word, and it'll pop up. Make sure you subscribe to that, because then know what? You're going to get notifications as we post new videos. Follow us. Make sure you like the videos, watch them, and share them. We release new videos every single Monday, and they're engaging videos. Greg Cash is an amazing, amazing videographer. He's doing a fantastic job transforming that for us, and it's really great. And we hit on the topics of, you know, science, apologetics tips, and how to engage in people tactics. And it's great also to share with your friends and get them to them. Or if there's ever the question that you don't quite know how to word or quite know how to answer, this is a great way to go to one of those short, brief videos. Check it out for a couple minutes, and maybe then you get equipped to answer your friends. And speaking of like YouTube and electronic stuff, you know, you can also download our app. The Stand to Reason app's available on all the platform. The latest app is filled with amazing content. And you can download the quick reference guide too. And in there is a great opportunity for you to, you can kind of look stuff up on the fly. And I've actually used this app on an airplane before. I've used it sitting next to somebody when I needed to reference something real fast. I think it was on biblical reliability. I opened the app real fast, boom, done. And I was able to give a decent answer. I actually looked at it with the guy next to me. So you can download that on the Google Play Store, or you can download it on iTunes radio. And make sure you do those things, guys, because we'd really love to share what we have. It's just another way that we can be discipling you, another way that we can help help train you up. And there's been something kind of on my mind as I sit here. I am I'm filling in for Greg, and it's really surreal. And one of the things that Greg has really helped me understand has to do with something that I think is actually one of the I want to say the most concerning topics that's out there today, I think, because I think it's pervasive. I think it's affected everything in our lives. And that has to do with relativism and the existence of an absolute truth. Sometimes we get caught up in actually, my old pastor said this one time. It was really funny. He said, he quoted Second Opinions 4:16. You know, there's no such thing as second opinions, for just making sure you guys know. But he says, I'm one of the ways, one of the truths, and one of the possible lives. You can come to me, the Father, through me or not. Live and believe whatever seems right to you, as long as you're sincere. And oh, yeah, as long as you don't hurt anybody. Does that ever sound familiar to you guys? You know, I deal with people all the time, or talk with people all the time who ascribe to this. Now, this is just like one semblance, kind of a funny semblance of relativism. It's this idea that you know, there's no absolute truth. It's the idea that the doctrine of knowledge, truth, and morality exist in relation to culture, society, or historical context, and it's not set firm in reality. It's a belief that objective truth doesn't exist. There's no right and wrong outside of individual belief. And I also work at a law firm as I'm transitioning here on to Stand to Reason. And I get this a lot at the law firm, actually, when I'm talking to folks. And, you know, well, that's good for you as long as it makes you happy. You know, well, we can't know truth. And for some reason, it actually like rears its head up. Most times when we're talking about religion, and I think it's because we don't want to offend anybody or nobody wants to be offended. I know I don't like to be offended. And I think that's one of the tricks is communicating these facts and these things without offending anybody, you know, but if you go back to that, you know, that fake scripture that I read, you know, one of the ways, one of the truths, you know, we know that that's not true. And when I say true, it doesn't accurately reflect the way the world really is. You know, we know that the Bible, and John says that I'm the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. That's recorded by John. It's Jesus. And I think it's important that we clarify when you hear relativism creeping in. I think it's important that we have these discussions with our friends. I can actually think of one example that I was in my church parking lot. And my brother was out visiting, and I love my brother. I have a big brother and a little sister, and I'm the only Christian in the family, and they probably think I've gone insane. I'm actually fairly certain they think I've gone insane or joined a cult or something. I don't know if you guys can relate to that. But I'm standing in the church parking lot, and my brother and I are talking about the existence of moral values. You know, where do we get the sense of right and wrong? And my brother was arguing for, you know, a social contract, which is just basically relativism. You know, it's this idea that the culture around us makes the values, what's right and wrong. And this isn't new thought. You know, it's been around for a long time. And actually, Friedrich Nietzsche, he's most famous in our circles, at least the Christian circles, for writing the God is dead stuff. But he also wrote this, and I thought it was really, really interesting. He says, you have your way. I have my way. As for the right way, the correct way, the only way. It does not exist. It's really interesting. And he's basically trying to prove the point that there is no truth. And in the brief time that we have maybe 25, 30 minutes together today. I want to try to walk through this with you and how do you address this stuff and also give you some practical examples of how relativism actually influences a lot of our conversations. So when somebody tells me that there is no truth, and I've actually had this conversation, I've had somebody over my house before who's spending the night, and we're having a conversation about this exact thing, relativism explicit, and I'm bringing up the fact that relativism fails, and it fails almost immediately, because in making a claim that relativism is true, you're making an absolute statement, and I'm trying to show the person I'm discussing this with. I'm trying to show them this, and I'm explaining it to them. And they weren't understanding it, and then you know what was really cool is actually this person went to bed, and then on their bed, and it wasn't even planned, on their bed was the book Relativism, Feet Firmly Planted in Midair by Greg Kochel and Dr. Beckwith, Francis Beckwith. And then our house guest read a portion of that. And the next morning they came out and were like, oh, wow, I think you were right. You know, and we were trying to prove the point. But how do we go about talking about these things with the average person? And I think the first thing that we really have to do is kind of wrestle with the nature of truth. We have to understand what truth is before we can say truth exists. And there's a few things that I like to remind people of when we're talking about truth. First is that truth is that which accurately reflects reality. You know, truth is a factually and logically correct claim. And there's something really important here. When we're talking about truth, truth is by definition exclusive. If it's true, that means it's not false. It's either or. It can't be both true and false at the same time. I don't think any of you are really being challenged by this. I think this isn't anything new. One of the things that I like, though, to think about truth is truth is discovered. It's not invented. Meaning we don't invent the truth. We discover the truth. You know, just because we discover something doesn't mean we invent it. When we realize, you know, the earth revolves around the sun, we didn't make that happen. We didn't invent that fact, but we discovered that truth. Truth exists independent of it being known. And that kind of correlates with that the other one, truth is discovered, not invented. And truth exists independent of it being known. So just because we don't know things doesn't mean their things aren't true. I love this because when I start to think about this stuff, it's like, you know, there's so much to the world around us. God has created a complex universe, which is actually one of the arguments for the existence of God, right? That everything is so finely tuned out there. But there are truths that we're discovering every single day about the world and the universe that we live in. And also, it's really, really important to understand that truth is not belief. Just because you believe something doesn't make it true. And we know that because we can be wrong in our beliefs. I don't know about you, but I've been wrong, well, all the time. And oftentimes I think we conflate these two ideas, that truth is belief. And it's just not so. And also truth doesn't correlate to how passionately we believe something. I've been told that before, especially in the context of the pro-life conversation. When I'm talking to somebody about abortion, oftentimes my interlocutor, at least it happened a few times, that my interlocutor will say, listen, I know you're passionate about this, you know, but I'm passionate. I'm equally as passionate. So we're both right. And I have to point out, well, no, it's not our passion that makes it true. It's not what we believe. The truth is independent of those things. Now, our beliefs can be true, and sometimes when I'm presenting this in a presentation or at a camp, I presented a talk on truth at Hume Lake this last summer with Stand the Reason. I do a truth test, and I think it's really, really helpful to understand that because there's certain claims that are objectively true, and then there's certain claims that are subjectively true. So now, what we're doing is, if you notice, we're splitting truth into two categories. So there's an objective truth, meaning it's true for all people, all places, all times. It's true of the object. And then there's subjective truth. It's the truth of the subject. It's a matter of personal preference oftentimes or opinion. And let me maybe throw out an example here. You know, the claim that I am wearing a pink shirt, for example, and I'm not wearing a pink shirt, but the claim that I'm wearing a pink shirt is a claim to an objective truth because I am either wearing a pink shirt or I am not wearing a pink shirt. Or how about this? We'll try a different one. Blue is the best color. You know, is blue the best color? There's some of you right now that are saying absolutely blue is the best color. I love blue. And some of you are saying no, but that is a subjective truth claim, meaning it's up to the subject. It's a matter of my personal opinion. It's not true for all people in all places at all times. I think this gets really important when we start talking about, how about this one? Jesus is the only way to salvation for all people, right? Oftentimes when I ask that question in the context of whether it be a Hume Lake camp or whether it be my church teaching, oftentimes people will raise their hands saying it's subjective because Jesus is the only way to salvation. Whoa, that's exclusive. I don't want to be exclusivistic. I'm gonna say that that's just a subjective truth claim. But no, it's an objective truth claim because Jesus is either the way to salvation for all people or he's not. And keep in mind that that these claims, that just because I say it doesn't mean it has to be true. Okay, I could make the claim that God does not exist. And while that's an objective claim to the truth, it's not true, but it's still an objective truth claim. I hope you guys are kind of picking up what I'm throwing down here. And I think oftentimes we think, well, why does this stuff even matter? Why do we even have to talk about this lofty philosophical stuff? We're splitting truth into two. We're talking about objective versus subjective. Like, who cares? Let's just have a conversation. Well, it's funny because actually Francis Beckwith uses this great example of a student who raises his hand and he says, yeah, and they're talking about this stuff. And the student says, we've talked a lot about truth, but why does it even matter? And then Francis Beckwith makes his point when he says, do you want the true answer or the false answer? Do you get what happened there, guys? Do you want me to lie to you? Well, no, nobody wants to be lied to. So you want the truth answer. So why is this stuff important? Well, it's important because to distinguish between what truth is and what truth isn't, objective truth versus subjective truth, matters, especially when it's related to important issues like salvation. And I think that there's a general trend. I'm not the only one who thinks this. There's scholars, Christian Smith, in the context of youth. Now, if you're a parent out there and you've got a high school student, first and foremost, you've got to get them to rethink. Absolutely, we've got them all over the country now, and we love to grow that. But you got to get them to rethink, to get training in how to think, not just what to think. We don't want to just indoctrinate people. We want to train them how to think. Because the Christian Smith writes this. He's a professor of sociology at Notre Dame. He says, American youth, like American adults, are nearly without exception, profoundly individualistic. I mean, I see that all the time, you know. And then he goes on to say that the typical bywords are, who am I to judge? If that's what they choose, whatever. Each person decides for himself. And if it works for them, fine. Some version of this individualistic subjectivism and relativism is the dominant assumed viewpoint about religion among most contemporary adolescents. Now, do you see how at the beginning of our discussion just now, at the beginning of this, I mentioned that this kind of seeps into all of our thinking. I actually think it has kind of snuck into our churches oftentimes. You try to do this truth test, in your church with some people. You know, all you got to do is write out a couple statements. You can do the ones I just mentioned. But according to statistics, even the church, even the folks in our churches are believing in this relativistic stuff. Relativism is kind of winning the day. And there's another scholar, Alan Bloom, in a wonderful book that I highly recommend, The Closing of the American Mind. He says, there is one thing a professor can be absolutely certain of. Almost every student entering the university believes, or say they believe, that truth is relative. The students, of course, cannot defend their opinion. It's something with which they've been indoctrinated. I find that really, really interesting. I think it explains an awful lot. In the last time you guys heard me, well, the first time you heard me, the last time you heard me, I talked about suicide. And I think that this relates a lot to that, because we live in a world where there's nothing concrete and it's highly individualistic. Everything's about me. You know, even when we think about God, oftentimes we make ourselves little gods. And in the process, we don't realize it necessarily, but we've made everything relative. So now there's no up and down. There's no right and left. There's no right and wrong. And this is something that's being that I think our youth are being indoctrinated with without us even knowing. And why does this stuff matter? You know, well, I can think of a bunch of examples. I was online having a conversation. This is a couple years ago now, and I was talking to a friend, and I'm friends with a lot of people who don't share my worldview, and a lot of them are atheists. And he says, "Well, hey, don't force your morals on me," you know. And I think that's an interesting statement, you know. And my response to him was, "Well, that's an interesting statement, but I think it's self-refuting." Because I think in that statement, it's relativistic, because what you're saying is don't force your morals on me. But in telling me not to force my morals on somebody, you're imposing your moral view onto me. So why are you telling me what to do and telling people not what to do? And I think that we see in those examples why relativism fails. You know, and speaking of moral absolutes, right? So we just saw that objection really quickly. You know, don't force your morals on me. Some statistics. This is data from Barna, and I found it really interesting. 32% of Christian adults believe in moral absolutes. Now, I want to say that again because there's something going on here. 32% of Christian adults believe in moral absolutes. What's that mean? Well, that means there's 68% of Christian adults, people who identify themselves as Christian adults, who don't believe in moral absolutes. Barna, in this study, the same study, they say that 15% of non-Christian adults believe in moral absolutes. That means, in general, 85% of the population who do not identify as Christian don't believe that there are any moral absolutes. Now, that shouldn't really shock us, but it should cause us to want to be able to learn to understand this and then also to be able to address it. 9% of Christian teenagers believe in moral absolutes. 9% of Christian teenagers believe in moral absolutes. That means 91% don't, which is really interesting. I wonder what's going on, you know? And then one of the statistics on Barna said that 4% of non-Christian teenagers believe in moral absolutes. That wrong is wrong and right is right. It's moral relativism. It's one system is not morally better than anything else. Moral values are relative to our personal experience. And I think that we can pull out a couple examples before we sign off for the day. You know, another online conversation had to do with abortion. And I'm talking to my cousin, and who doesn't believe like I do. And it goes along the lines of, you know, why are you telling somebody what to do? You know, and I have a quote here from him. He wrote to me because we're talking like, well, I don't think abortion is right. I think, and I'm making a pro-life argument. And he says, I don't know why any of y'all give a hoot about what a woman wants to do with her own body. Taking away her right to choose for herself is an attack on individual liberty. And I wonder if you're listening, how are you responding to that? Like, how would you respond to that? And do you feel capable? Well, if you've been listening to Greg, I think that because he talks about this a lot. And one of the areas that Greg has really helped me on is this, you know, and to my cousin, actually, I think I helped him actually, because like when he asked this question, I asked him a question back. Right. So this is a Columbo tactic. It's, you know, I'm trying to find some stuff out about what he believes. I say, well, do we ever tell a woman what to do with her body? Well, sometimes I think we do, right? There's certain drug therapies that are illegal, especially if you're carrying a baby, if you're pregnant. You know, we have certain moral obligations that take priority over individual freedom sometimes, and I think that's certainly true in the conversation having to do with abortion. You know, and I think the fundamental right is the right to life, and in its extreme circumstances that we should be allowed to violate that. Another instance that I've gotten actually just recently, which I thought was really interesting. I was in a conversation with a young lady, and we were just talking because I'm in a time of kind of transition in my life, and we're just chatting it up. We hadn't seen each other in a while, and we're giving each other updates. And we start talking about things of faith, and she's using the language, you know, like I thought that maybe she had become a believer. So I started to talk about the Bible with her, and she says, oh, well, the Bible's true for you, but it's not for me. You know, I take certain passages are really good, certain passages aren't. You know, it reminds me of, if you guys have ever read Stephen Turner's Modern Thinker's Creed. I love Stephen Turner's Modern Thinker's Creed. We believe all religions are basically the same, at least the ones that we read were. They all believe in love, goodness. They all only differ in matters of creation, sin, heaven, hell, God, and salvation. You know, it's like, it's this idea that, well, all roads lead to heaven. The Bible's true for you, but not for me. I'm going to take and take what I like and pick and choose from it. And I'm going to build my own truth from that. And it was a good conversation that I got to have for there. One of the things I love about these types of things, when people are talking about the relativistic claims, or they're bringing up relativistic claims, is, for me, at least in my experience, most of the time, they're pretty non-confrontational. If we learn the tactics on how to address them, it actually comes out to be a really good conversation. The Bible is true for you, but not for me. Well, tell me more about that. Well, what do you mean it's true for you, not for me? So you, do you believe what you just said, that Jesus said so such and such? Is that something that you believe? Or do you believe something that Gandhi said? Or do you believe in Islam? And then oftentimes when I start bringing this stuff and I start getting deeper, people say, well, no, I don't believe in Islam, but I pick and choose from Christianity. And but you can do whatever you want. And I'll say, well, do Islam and Christianity teach the same thing? Well, not really, you know, sometimes. Or you know, is atheism and Christianity the same thing? Excuse me. No. No, it's not. They blatantly say that. And I say, well, yeah, this is because the truth of the Bible, it's either true or not. It's not up to you to decide what portions are true. And if you're pulling certain passages out of the Bible, why are you choosing to believe those and not the other ones? Is it just based on your subjective opinion? And you can help people, you can lead people down through questioning, you can lead them down the path of understanding and say, well, you know, if this passage is true, why isn't this passage? And eventually, it's really cool to see what happens when people's eyes start to, well, become illuminated. You know, they like the light bulb goes off. Excuse me. Especially in the context of youth groups. I love this because oftentimes, so I do these youth atheist role plays. And I'll be I push relativism the whole time. And what I do is I get up there and I say, hey, you know what, guys, I'm not here to convince you out of your religion. I think it's fantastic that you're Christian. Sometimes I wish I was a Christian. But just don't force your morals on me. Don't like make me become a Christian, you know. Believe what you want. And here's the deal, guys. Religion, it's just like music. It's just like music. You know, some of you like Bruno Mars, and I'll play like a Bruno Mars clip. Some of you like Taylor Swift. And like, who likes Taylor Swift? You know, and people like raise their hands. And then some people like so-and-so. It's just like music. You go with what you like. What you don't like is okay. It all ends up in the same place. And it's interesting hearing these students when they try to respond to that. You know, how do you respond to the relativistic claims? Is it like music, or does the Bible claim things, does the Christian worldview claim things that are true for all people in all places at all times? Right? It takes us back to the beginning of our conversation. You have that fake Bible verse, but then you have the John 14, right? John 14, 6 says that I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but by me. So if that claim is true, if Jesus is raised from the dead, we can know that. And if we know that, and it's not no in this relativistic sense, it's this no in an objective sense. It's true for all people in all places at all times. And it's really important. I'd say that it's really important for every single person to know. I think that actually it's the most important thing that we could possibly know. So next time when we're talking to our friends and they're bringing up these relativistic claims, when they're saying, well, everything's just a matter of opinion, ask them, well, is that just your opinion? Or is that a truth claim? You know, is it your opinion that it's all opinion, or is it really all opinion? And see if you can throw them off and trip them up. And it's amazing, like I said, that when people, and oftentimes this happens with me at least, when I'm talking to somebody, and I'm paying attention to what they say, and if they're claiming to be a relativist, and during the course of the conversation, I just kind of pay attention to what they're saying, and then when they kind of go towards relativism, or then they start making truth claims that apply to me. I say, whoa, 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 whoa. Who are you to tell me what to do? I thought that you said everything is relative. You know, why are you trying to force, you know, your morals on me? And you kind of flip the tables a little bit. And there's some great tactics also. And if you guys haven't read Tactics, you really should. It's Greg's book. Oh, he's coming out with a new version of that too, which is promising to be phenomenal. I'm sure it's going to be fantastic. And you could read that and you can learn more tactics. You can learn the Columbo tactics. You know, what did you mean by that? How'd you come to that conclusion? Can you clear something up for me? And these tactics help wonderfully in the area of truth and relativism. And let me say again, as we begin the close here, that I think that relativism is one of the biggest threats to the church right now, to the Christian worldview. I think that if we look at what we commonly agree are troublesome, atheism, I talked about suicide before on the show. I've talked about any number of issues. I think that oftentimes there's a semblance, or they found their foundation kind of, or they lead to a relativistic worldview, where we just kind of make up our own answers. We are the masters of our own ship. And what I say goes is ultimately rooted in relativism, that there is no objective meaning outside of myself, the person. And I think that this stuff's really important to bone up on. So make sure you hit up our blogs on this too, because Amy does a great job addressing this. Tim, Alan, they do a wonderful job addressing these issues on our blog. You can just search relativism and find great resources right there. And I think that once you're getting equipped, once you realize how to recognize relativism when you see it, you'll be able to answer it. So, hey guys, thank you guys so much for being with me today. Again, my name's John. I'm filling in for Greg Kokel here on Stand to Reason, and I look forward to doing this again with you sometime. Thanks. Bye-bye.